Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
To Wesley Fields. Touchdown, Georgia Southern.
All right, guys, welcome to the August 29th Georgia Southern Extra Podcast. I'm Travis Jadon, joined, as always, by Greg Talbot of WSAV. Greg, how are you?
Doing good. Travis, how are you, bud?
Doing well, man. So let's get started right away. We'll get into our four downs, just some takeaways from the week from the last time we were on. First, I'll start. I think my first down would be that Georgia Southern this weekend would do well by themselves to take care of business early on Saturday. I know that's probably kind of obvious, but if they get ahead like they should on South Carolina State, they could avoid having to use guys like Westfields for longer than they need to, for longer than a half, longer than three quarters. Could also get a chance for guys that you haven't got a chance to see a bunch of reps. You could get those guys a chance to get in and evaluate them more. Also, you don't want to have to show too much of Bob DeBess's new playbook. So my first down would be that Georgia Southern should do everything it can to get ahead early, stay ahead early, and then get guys out of the game.
Yeah, my, I guess, second down here, Travis, is that I am not nervous about this game on Saturday, although I think when I was at the press conference with you and everybody else on Monday, talking to Chad Lunsford and two of the players, they are excited and they are positive. They are not cocky. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a little bit of trepidation when I asked about South Carolina State being an FCS opponent. Shai Wirtz came back with me and hit me right away. He's like, well, we lost to New Hampshire last year, and that was an embarrassing game for that team. So, yes, they're big-time favorites. South Carolina State got whipped by Savannah State last year, so that should tell you what kind of team this is, especially considering that they had the best run defense in the MEAC last year, and they lost all those great guys. Mm-hmm. So South Carolina State is not a heavyweight by any means. That said, I don't think this is a game that they can afford to not go all out on the first half, just considering what happened last year against New Hampshire.
Right, certainly don't want any repeats of New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Or really a lot of last season, you don't want any repeats.
Pretty much all of it, yeah.
All right, so for third down, I would say that the Sun Belt is top-loaded, but Georgia Southern has a favorable schedule with all things considered. Appalachian State, Troy, and Arkansas State, as we've talked about before, the class of the league. They'll have 17 of the 23 all Sun Belt first team selections. So 17 of the 23 best players in the conference, according to coaches, play for those three teams. Now, Georgia Southern gets every single one of those games at home. So to win one of three of those would be, I think, setting you up nicely for a good season. If you could somehow win two of three, then you're talking about a miracle season. So all things considered, Georgia Southern's schedule this year does set up well, but looking down the line, that means you're probably going to have every other year, you'll have to go on the road to Troy, on the road to Appalachian State, and then on the road to Arkansas State, assuming you play them across the division. So this year it sets up nicely for Southern, but just keep an eye on those three teams who have really top-loaded the conference.
Yeah, and don't forget that in a year or two when Jimmy Chadwell takes over that Coastal Carolina team, that's not going to be a fun game to have in your division either, along with Georgia State. So yeah, the Eastern Division of the Sun Belt is absolutely loaded. My fourth down, Travis, is I want to see 25,000 people in Statesboro on Saturday at Paulson Stadium. And not every game needs to be that way. I think obviously the school would like it if it was that way, but here's the thing is Georgia Southern fans last year clamored for Tyson Summers to get out of town, and they paid him out. He's at Georgia now. They got him out of town, and there was a good crowd for Chad's first home game as head coach, but there are not that many incredible college football games on Saturday. You're going to watch Washington-Auburn. That's going to be must-watch TV, and there are a couple other ones, but it's not like we have Ohio State-Michigan this Saturday. Like, 6 o'clock, a lot of the good games are going to be done by then. If you live within a couple hours of Statesboro, come out for this game, because again, I don't have a dog in this fight. I didn't go to Georgia Southern. The school doesn't pay me to be a spokesperson for them, but I think that there is a real desire, and according to Chad Lunsford, kind of a need for the guys on this team to learn to ride the lightning of momentum at Paulson Stadium. I think this is a young team, so many freshmen and sophomores on the depth chart, that they need to learn what it's like to have a crowd behind them, which is something they, honest to God, really didn't have much the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that the Georgia Southern fan base will respond. And like you said, Lunsford and company have done everything they can do to get the word out. So we'll move on now to our game week news and notes. It's finally game week. It's finally football season. I know, Greg, you're as excited as I am. All right, so we'll start with some thoughts on the depth chart released this week for week one. Some surprises, some, you know, things that we thought we would see, but now we have them confirmed. We'll start where Georgia Southern says it starts. We'll start up front on the offensive line. There's three guys here with no career starts set to start week one against South Carolina State. The only freshman starter on either side of the ball is the Savannah native, Brian Miller, the redshirt right tackle from Memorial Day School. Greg, you can chime in as you see fit. Some other things that I thought stood out. Obi Fortune not starting.
I will chime in right away. That was one that really surprised me, because here's the thing. The leading receiver on this Georgia Southern team last year was Malik Henry, who transferred out in the offseason, so they lost the guy who was going to be their number one receiver headed into the year. So you and I were sitting here, what, even a month and a half ago when we recorded our first episode, saying, all right, this is going to be Obi Fortune's unit on wide receiver. And we I got the depth chart on Sunday, because I'm broadcasting the game on ESPN Plus, doing play-by-play for it. And I was like, I texted Brian Johnson, the SID. I was like, is this right?
Yeah.
So we don't have the details on what happened, but I was kind of surprised about the fact that really the only name at wide receiver that I knew really well was Wes Kennedy.
Yeah.
As a starting wide receiver. Like, it really isn't. Clearly, I mean, I'm sure they'll target Obi Fortune because he's one of the experienced guys who was a pass catcher last year, the number two receiver last year. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised that Obi is not going to be starting at wide receiver.
And like you said, you know, it could be something we don't know. It could be, you know, a way to motivate Obi. I don't know, you know, what his demeanor is, but there could be something behind the scenes there. I think Fortune will get plenty of reps come game time, but it is something to note that Colby Ransom would be starting ahead of him. I think it's at the, Z receiver. Another note from the depth chart, like you said, you touched on Wes Kennedy. Kennedy is set to start in three different positions at slot, kick returner, and punt returner. Does worry me a little bit with his size that he'll be touching the ball a little too often. But I think that the goal has been the whole offseason to get Kennedy the ball in as many ways as possible, instead of just, you know, tossing him the swing pass and settling for that. But the way to get him the ball is, I mean, there is no wrong way to get him the ball, in other words. So once he has it, anything can happen, and we know that from watching him play in Savannah.
Well, what I'm really excited to see, in more intrigued than excited to watch about Wes Kennedy this year for Georgia Southern, is he got some legit touches last year. I mean, wasn't one of the top two running backs. We know L.A. Ramsby and then Fields, but he was a guy who got touches, especially later in
towards
the year.
Towards the end.
Later in the season. I was at that Georgia State game, and he was, people were like, who is this kid? I was like, well, we know that kid. He went to Benedict, and he's a stud coming out of Savannah. The thing was, last year, he didn't make a catch. They used him on offense as exclusively a running back. Now, you and I watched him at Benedict and covering him the last couple of years. We know he has hands. We know he can catch balls coming out of the backfield. But I would say that looking back into my memory bank, I don't remember him lining up as a wide receiver at Benedictine. Not to say he can't, but I am intrigued to see how they use him, if it's really as more of a slot back, because I'd be surprised if they use him exclusively as a passing target.
Yeah,
considering the success he had last year, and especially throughout his life as a running back.
Yeah, they've shown formations. Nearly every formation that he lines up in, he lines up in the slot to start.
It's surprising.
But they've shown looks where he does come behind Wirtz out of the pistol look.
As they should.
Yeah, and that's all before the snap. So, again, it's just another example of how they're going to move Kennedy around and do everything they can to get him the ball in space. Looking over on the defensive side of the depth chart, first thing that sticks out to me is how veteran this back four is. So the two corners and the two safeties really stand out to me, with Monquavion Brinson and Kendall Vildor at the corner spots, and then Sean Freeman and Josh Moon, two seniors, in the back. They've also moved Jay Bowdry down to the anchor linebacker position, which is an outside linebacker position where you're asked to supply more coverage than pass rush for the most part. So I think that this defense, especially in the back, is as veteran as it gets and could be one of the most underrated units in the entire conference.
And they're not going to need it much probably this week, considering this is a game they should run away with. They're going to need it next week. UMass opened up the season. That's the Southern week to opponent. They hung 63 points on Duquesne in week zero. Yeah. So don't look past South Carolina State. But I think, like you and I have been saying for months, the game that's actually going to tell us where this team is next week against the Minutemen.
Yeah, right after South Carolina State. I mean, they'll be tested immediately after that. So, and then another note from the defense, Todd Bradley. It's unfortunate because he's had a bunch of injuries. The redshirt sophomore from Valdosta was scheduled to start at the Mike linebacker position. He was not listed on the depth chart due to his left knee injury. So he is expected back at some point this season, but definitely won't be playing this week. And safe to say that he won't be playing next week as well. After that, we're not sure. But definitely thoughts with Bradley in this time as he's recovering. Special teams, though, we have finally a punter wins the job. I think, you know, I don't know if from what I saw, if Bowerly actually won the job or if he lost it the least. So Bowerly will start on...
Well, hopefully they just never have to punt.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Is to just keep running it and getting first downs. So Bowerly, when they do have to punt, will be the punter. We know Tyler Bass is the All-Sun Belt place kicker. Logistically, Bob DeBest will be coaching from the box. Scott Sloan from the sideline. Greg, do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, do you have any preferences when it comes to your coaches?
Not particularly, although I will say I understand the rationale of having Bob DeBest up in the box.
He likes it up there, he said, yeah.
Well, here's the thing, though, is because there are some offensive coordinators who are all about instant communication with the quarterback as they get off the field. But DeBest knows that he is having to recraft this offensive unit kind of in his image. And tell me if I'm wrong with my math here. I believe this is a senior class that has had four offensive coordinators in 4 years. Like they were all recruited for different iterations of the option offense. And he's an offensive guru, so I can see why he would want to be upstairs, be able to see the all 22. And be able to telephone or communicate with his guys on the sideline that way. But I think he is still in the kind of early stages, and I believe this in my gut, despite the fact that I think there's a little bit of maybe a little over-optimism in terms of how much this offense has really gotten together, and we'll find out by next week against UMass. I would say that I understand why he wants to be upstairs and see the All-22 and be able to view it as more of a film session and continue to teach the kids this offense. Maybe later in the season he's down there, but I think for now, when this offense is still in the transformation stage, still getting used to the playbook, still becoming a unit in that image, I get why he wants to have that perspective.
I did want to touch on a couple numbers as far as the roster goes. There's 116 players on the Georgia Southern roster currently, you know, as we sit here and record this on Wednesday afternoon. Of those 116, 30 are listed as sophomores and 52 are freshmen. So that makes 71% of the Georgia Southern roster as underclassmen. As veteran as this team is, and I think it's like something like 13 seniors in the starting 22. So as veteran as this team is, I think there's not a lot of middle ground. It's a lot of veteran senior leadership, and then it's a lot of talented, what we think to be talented freshmen. So, you know, keep an eye on that as the season goes along. If there are injuries and if the two deep and three deep starts to need to be used, then we could see a lot of young faces on the field for Georgia Southern. Another note that I think is relevant is that 80 players of the 116 are from the state of Georgia, which puts it at 69%. Nice, Greg.
Nice.
So we have plenty of homegrown talent for the Eagles as they head into week one with South Carolina State. Before we wrap up, I wanted to take a moment to talk about the Lowcountry Brunch Festival, taking place on September 8th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Shelter Cove Community Park on Hilton Head Island. The one-day festival celebrates the Lowcountry's love for brunch. The area's best establishments will create $3 brunch-inspired bites while guests indulge and enjoy beer, mimosas, and Bloody Marys from our spirit sponsors. The event also features live music, activities, and a private VIP experience. Check out LowcountryBrunchFest.com for ticket information and participating vendors. Use the code COMMUTE, COMMUTE, to get $5 off at checkout. Again, that's LowcountryBrunchFest.com. All right, Greg, let's get into some closing thoughts here. I know you love predictions and you love the...
You know me, I'm all about the takes, Travis. Yeah. I got my takes ready to go.
We'll get to your 49ers takes soon, I'm sure. But mm-hmm. let's go to something I ran across last week, which was interesting to me, at least. Hopefully it's interesting to you. TeamRankings.com puts out percentages for season outcomes for individual games, and they do it based on nothing but analytics. So there's no, you know, human thought or judgment that goes into this. It's strictly computers and simulations. So what they do is they simulate the entire season. I think it's 10,000 times, and then they give you the most off the results most often happen. So for Georgia Southern, they've bounced between 6.5 and 6.8 wins this year on team rankings.
You and I were saying either 5 or 6 the last time we talked, so it sounds like this is kind of consensus.
Yeah, I think so. But from looking at it and from looking at some of these numbers, I encourage you to check it out. It's teamrankings.com, and you can just search for Georgia Southern. They have them at 6.8 and 5.2. Percentage to make a bowl game is 72.4%, which is high,
I think. That's higher than I think we originally thought.
Yeah, and percentage to win the division, 17%. Percentage to win conference, 9%. I think a lot of this has to do with, and 17 and 9%, I'm not suggesting that's a high number, but it's, you know, it's certainly not less than 1%. It's not doable. I think a lot of this has to do with what we touched on earlier, them having the three hardest teams in the conference at home. I don't know this, but I would think it's safe to say they're the only team in the conference that gets all three at home. 6.8 and 5.2, for me, looking at these numbers and then kind of evaluating the team this offseason, especially this fall camp, it's caused me to up my win total prediction to 7. So, Greg, I'm going to give you this opportunity. And I have them at wins at South Carolina State, UMass, Coastal, Georgia State, App State, Texas State, and New Mexico State.
Okay, so I'm interested just to hear your rationale. I'm not saying you're wrong. What makes you think that App State is going to be a win at home on Thursday?
I think if you look at those three games at home, and Georgia Southern has, like we said, all these veteran players that have spent the last, what is it, 2 years that they've lost to all three? I think, but maybe even 3 or 4 years, honestly. At some point, they're going to beat one of these teams. And I'm looking at App State, Troy, Arkansas State. I don't see Arkansas State early on. I don't see that happening. I don't see Troy because I don't think that they match up well with them at all. And maybe less
well,
so.
Well, it's a young offensive line versus the best defensive line in the Sunbelt.
Yeah. So, and probably one of the better defenses in the country, honestly.
So is it App State in your mind because
would be the third team?
Well, no, and because it's late enough in the year that maybe the offense has really gotten into their zone by then?
Yeah, and you're going against a team that's losing its 4-year starter at quarterback, a Thursday night at home in Statesboro. Like we've talked about before, if the season has gone close to what Georgia Southern hopes it, then I think App State sets up for a big-time game for Georgia Southern. And I definitely think they have the talent to compete with Appalachian State. What are your thoughts, Rick?
I don't think this team's short on talent. I'm not worried. I am interested, I know I keep saying that, to see what this offensive line does against Arkansas State, because that's the first legit Sun Belt test they have. It's the first Sun Belt game, period. Mm-hmm. But this first game on South Carolina State, that's not going to be representative. Playing the best front seven in the country against Clemson in Week 3 is not going to be representative. I don't think the UMass defensive pass rush is going to be representative. They might as well be a Big 12 team.
They shut down Duquesne.
Yeah, and the way they play. So we're not going to know really what this offensive line is about probably until that Arkansas State game. I don't think this team is short on talent. I think they might be short on experience on offense, and they're going to be really reliant on this defense in the early Sun Belt Conference games, I think, to try to keep them in it, because I don't think this is a 35 points a game team. I think this is more like a 21 points a game team.
Which is right about what they averaged last year. I think that if the points per game stay the same, then the points allowed per game should hopefully go down for Georgia Southern. Anything else, Greg? Anything else you want to touch on before we head out and tell the guys what's next week?
Just really excited for the chance to call the games at home this year for Georgia Southern on ESPN+. So that's going to be a good one. It's $5.99 a month or Fortnite, whatever. It's $5 a month if you want to subscribe and watch every Sun Belt Conference game all season long on the app. I'll be joined by Danny Waugh, who works for Georgia Southern. He'll be doing color commentary for the broadcast. So it's going to be a great thing that we do. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, and for anyone that doesn't have ESPN Plus, I mean, I can vouch for it. I've had it for a few months now, and I love it. I mean, it's definitely worth the cost. And you get Georgia Southern Athletics on there, but there's so much more. Greg, you've used it, I'm sure. There's so much more on that ESPN Plus than just Georgia Southern. It's well worth the price. Yeah, before we head out, let's give a prediction for week one.
Let's give some takes.
South Carolina State. So I'll start here. I'm gonna go 41-10 Georgia Southern week one. I say they put up 41 points. They get the starters out early after the third, and then run away, probably giving up a touchdown late.
We're close. I had 42-14.
42-14. So I got 41-10, and Greg has 42-14. See who's closer on that.
And hopefully, to go along with that, hopefully we don't see Wesley Fields have to play for the second half, and hopefully we don't have to see a lot of the guys who would possibly risk injury go. Now, I want to see all the young receivers, even if they're first unit guys, I still want to see them play. Like, yeah. If you're talking about, for example, Colby Ransom, who's starting ahead of Obie Fortune, I want to see him play until early in the fourth quarter. I want to see the third running back, Logan Wright. I want to see the fourth and fifth running backs in Grant Walker and Matt LaRoche. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see all these redshirt freshmen and sophomores and true freshmen, I want to see all of them play, even if they're up three touchdowns. Like, I would much rather see the young starters stay in and continue to learn the best offense,
yeah,
versus going deep on the depth chart to older guys. I want the freshmen and sophomores no matter what, even if they're high on the depth chart.
Yeah, and even behind Fields, Garrett still has, you know, some injuries, Mateo Garrett. So behind Garrett should be all three of those guys, Logan Wright, Matt LaRoche, and Grant Walker. So like,
if you're old enough to know the offense and you're a skill player, I want you out by halftime.
Yeah. And that should be their goal. I mean, there's no getting around it. I mean, they should take care of business early and be able to get those guys out.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, we've touched on it before, the new redshirt rule. You don't have to worry about any of that. So that's our predictions, our show for this week, guys. Make sure you come back next week for our review of the South Carolina State win, hopefully, and our preview for the all-important UMass game, some revenge on the docket for Georgia Southern, hopefully from last year at 6 p.m. A note of sorts, the UMass game on September 8th at 6 p.m., that would be the 12-year anniversary of Irk Russell's death, who died on September 8th, 2006. So stay tuned for notes from the school on that. I'm sure there'll be something set up for that anniversary, and we will definitely touch on Irk Russell next week as well. Until next time, thanks for joining us, Greg, and thanks for stopping by Georgia Southern Extra Podcast, guys.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
The Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.